You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone. Jose Youngs here, themafighting.com, here with another episode of the A-Side Live Chat on our YouTube channel. And as I always say, a million subscribers, so whoop whoop. But with me this week, last week was Anthony. Before that, we had Pete. Pete has had much needed time off after his hectic week at Bellator London. He was at the Cage Warriors show. So if you want to see any of his interviews, you can stay on this YouTube channel. Go watch them all. Obviously, James Gallagher was there. Don't want to miss those interviews. Patty Pimlet, was his stuff with Patty Pimlet was great. He really got the finger on the pulse of that situation with the failed weight cut of Joe Giannetti. But if you want to watch those, you could go watch them after the A-Side Live Chat. Last week, we had Anthony. He was great. This week, we have my very good friend from all the way across the other side of the country, Mike Heck. How you been, man?
Been good, man. How are you? Thank you for having me, by the way. I've been waiting for that text message to come, and I'm glad it finally came.
I always like giving the spotlight to my fellow journalists, especially the ones that I've known for so long and the ones that I've actually worked together, and especially the ones that live in my old neck of the woods of the New England area. You're a Patriots fan, correct?
Yes, I know you don't like that. But
well,
yes.
we can't all be winners out there.
The Patriots can, though.
Yeah, well, what do you have? One win, right? One loss? To who?
One loss. 10-1.
To who?
Baltimore.
How about that? Anyway, I'm not even a Ravens fan. I just think it's funny. But as you guys all know, this is not our show. This is your show. So if you want to ask us anything, literally anything you want to talk about. I don't know if you've watched the show in the past, Mike. Oh, actually, you definitely have. But we've had questions about androids. We've had questions about who would win in a fight if all the MMA fighting staff got in a fist fight. We'll talk about anything you guys want. You just go into the MMAfighting.com, click on the link that says the A-Side is live, leave your question in the comment section, or you can go to Twitter and use hashtag the A-Side. We've been getting a lot of really good questions on Twitter. Maybe next week we'll start with Twitter and we'll migrate to the site. But for this week, we're starting on the site. So we're going to kick things off right away. Mike from longtime commenter Trumbo. 3 years in, opinions on Champ Champ. Hello, boys. And again, I read these questions verbatim, spelling errors, grammar errors, everything. I include them. So if I sound dumb, because a lot of people only listen to this podcast, they don't watch it. So I want to preface this because a lot of people get on my case for weird pronunciations, and I read them verbatim. So, hello, boys. The whole Champ Champ experiment has been, in my humble opinion, at least half a disaster. With the most recent in Cejudo, we basically have a worst-case scenario. Champ Champ gets injured and holds up two divisions for a substantial length of time. Even defending each belt once a year would be aggressive, and more than some current UFC champs defend one belt. Having one fighter in the division get a title shot per year is awful and really unfair to the top fighters. 3 years into it, what's your opinion on UFC following double champs? Pro or against? Aside from Conor, does it even hold enough drawing power to justify the damage it does to the division? Note, exception here is probably Nunes, as featherweight is so shallow and she's basically cleaned out bantamweight. So, yes, Mike, interesting question. We're 3 years into this whole champ-champ trend. Even Bellator has tried to do it. I'm sure ONE Championship will try and do it. You know, ONE Championship has tried to do it too. But as Trumbo, Mr. Trump, or Miss, I don't know, has pointed out, the championship situation, specifically with Henry Cejudo, has really held up two divisions. We really thought we had clear number one contenders in both after UFC 238, I believe. It was in Chicago. Henry Cejudo beat Samuel Moraes. I thought for sure Aljamain Sterling was up next at bantamweight, and Joseph Benavidez was next up at flyweight. That is not the case. Joe Benavidez said he'll wait if Henry comes back and promises he gets the next title shot. If he goes up, he should vacate. Now we have Jose Aldo into the mix. Uriah Faber is back. All of a sudden, Frankie Edgar is at bantamweight. Peter Yan is still doing his thing. Aljamain Sterling has surgery. Corey Sandhagen's now been thrown into the wolves with Frankie Edgar. So with all these bantamweight title fights, the only thing missing is the champion being active. Same with flyweight. We have Davison Figueiredo is on fire. Joseph Benavidez, I don't know if anyone can argue he's not the number one contender. But what are your thoughts on this champ-champ situation holding up two divisions?
I mean, this particular case is interesting because at first when this idea came up that Henry Cejudo would fight for the bantamweight title, you know, we were all about it because we thought if there's any guy that could drop and do both, you know, Henry Cejudo could do it, especially when we thought he was as healthy as he could be. Turns out he wasn't as healthy as we thought he could be, and now all this is happening. So it's unfortunate because the fighters' heads and their minds are bigger than a lot of different things. Because, like, obviously, when you have the opportunity to win two titles, you're going to jump all over it no matter how battered and how beat up you are. And we don't really take that into account. So unfortunately, Cejudo got bit with the injury bug. The Connor situation is just a Connor situation, and it still hasn't really been figured out at this point. So I think it depends on the fighter. Obviously, Daniel Cormier had his sights set on going to heavyweight. He won the heavyweight title and just pretty much vacated the light heavyweight title pretty quickly and emphatically. So it's really a tough case. I hate the champ-champ thing. I hate the double-champ thing. It's a cool thing. When Connor did it for the first time, we were like, yeah, but we also – look at the Ultimate Warrior. WrestleMania 6 wins the world title and then vacates the Intercontinental title. Like, I think if you go up for a different belt, you should be – your mind should be thinking that you're probably going to vacate one of those belts. Like, it's cool to have the moment, hold up the two belts, but eventually you should probably drop one of them.
Yeah, It's I like the idea if you can defend both of them. Amanda, as Trumbo pointed out, Amanda Nunes seems to be the only one that's really doing that. I think the she has both belts. She has both new belts, if I'm not mistaken. Correct. She after beating Holly Holm, she got the new UFC belt. Like the
I
new.
I thought she had one. I thought she had one.
Well, I can't quite. Oh yeah, did she get it? Oh, because when she beat Amanda Nunes, when she beat Chris Cyborg, she did not get the new one, right? She got.
I think.
Regardless.
Paul, yeah. Yeah, Holmes, she got the new one. She still had the big one at the press conference at 244.
Right. So if Amanda Nunes, I think, is the only one. She won the featherweight championship, dropped back down to bantamweight, and then there's really no clear number one contender featherweight. So once that situation plays out, maybe she goes up. If Jermaine Durandamy, who was the inaugural featherweight champion, people don't talk about that. Say Jermaine Durandamy beats Amanda Nunes, why not rematch them at featherweight for the featherweight title? So then we would have another champ in the female division. But Daniel Cormier was champ. He defended his light heavyweight championship enough times, and then when he beat Stipe Miocic for the heavyweight championship of the world, he really held out for that Brock Lesnar match. I don't blame him for not dropping back down to light heavyweight unless it was for Jon Jones. If that Brock Lesnar paycheck was there as soon as Brock Lesnar was out of the picture, they rematched. And he did fight Derek Lewis, but that was on short notice, and they really needed someone for that Madison Square Garden card. And I firmly believe if it was anyone other than Derek Lewis, I don't think Daniel Cormier would have taken that fight. But the Connor situation, I think, really left a bad taste in my mouth. I thought it was really very cool to see finally see that, because we've been wanting that for so long. I think Anderson Silva versus George St. Pierre would have been amazing if George had gone up, or Anderson. I'm not saying Anderson would have made the weight if one of them had changed divisions and then we had a champ. I think then would have been appropriate, because they had cleaned out their divisions. George had beaten everyone at welterweight, Anderson beaten everyone at middleweight. I think that was the appropriate time for champ versus champ. The BJ Penn George St. Pierre one was cool too, but now I feel like everyone wants to do it. I mean, Tyron Woodley wins and he's calling out like middleweight champs. When everyone wants to go up, everyone wants to go down, no one wants to defend, which is why fighters like Max Holloway and Khabib, who are like, no, I want to dominate my division, are so unique. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mike.
It would, to add to that, flyweight is way more interesting than it was a year and a half ago. I mean, you got guys like Matt Schnell, who has been really exciting as of late and is really, you know, making a statement and moving up the ladder. You got guys like Jordan Espinosa still there. And you have unsigned flyweights right now who could do a number. And like Brandon Royval, like what he did at LFA 79, that guy should absolutely get a shot at the flyweight division. And he's a top 15 guy as soon as the pen hits the paper. You know what I mean? So flyweight is super interesting. There's guys outside that are knocking on the door that should get in, and the division is continuing to move up. So you give all the credit in the world to Cejudo for giving life and rebirth to the flyweight division and saving it and letting it become what it's going to become. But I think the champ thinks if Cejudo drops the belt, like, the division will move forward. Beforehand, a year ago, year and a half ago, it wouldn't have been like that. Now we're there, so let's move on.
I couldn't have said any better. Like, I think the problem is Henry Cejudo should, if he's not going back to flyweight, should vacate the flyweight championship or the world and let Joseph Benavidez and Figueiredo fight for it. And then Henry Cejudo can just stay at 135. The problem here is this Triple C gimmick he has is like everything. He can't be Triple C if he gives up the flyweight championship of the world. If Dana White says you have to fight Benavidez next or vacate, and he vacates, he's not Triple C anymore. I mean, technically, he never lost, and everyone's going to say that. But it's 1-1 with Joseph. Like, Joseph Benavidez already beat him. Let him rematch. If he wins, like, they, like, It's there. Like, I don't want to see Henry Cejudo fight anyone other than Joseph Benavidez next. There are fights I like. Like, I like the Frank Edgar fight. I like the Dominic Cruz fight and the Jose Aldo fight and all this. But what about Joe Benavidez? I don't like seeing hard work not pay off, especially when Henry Cejudo saved the flyweight division when he beat TJ Dillashaw, and now he's not fighting at flyweight anymore. I get it. Just give up the belt or move on. And again, Rory McDonald also tried to become a champ, if I'm not mistaken, right? He went up. Gegard definitely didn't go down. Gegard did say he wanted to go down to welterweight, though, after seeing Douglas Lima. He's like, yeah, I'm like the same size as that guy. I can make welterweight. So Bellator and Ryan Bader, same thing. Ryan Bader, I think, is going to be one of those guys that defends both belts. He fought Chet Congo. Yes, it was a no contest because of that weird eye poke situation. He ran through that heavyweight Grand Prix. If he goes back to light heavyweight, like he said he did, he wanted to go to Ryzen and fight for like a heavyweight or light heavyweight championship. I know KSW wants something to do with Bellator, so maybe Bader versus Phil DeFreeze, maybe he becomes an actual triple champ with two Bellator championships and a KSW champion. But then what happened with Kyoji Horiguchi? He wins the Bellator championship, goes back to Ryzen, and then gets knocked out. So it's like this whole I'm over it. Mike, you're over it, right?
Now we're going to have guys after this conversation try to be quadruple champions. So we're just going down this terrible rabbit hole right now that we need to pull ourselves out of. But yeah, I'm with you on one title's good. I mean, Bader's a different exception. Maybe I think he could probably handle both. But I don't really see anybody else right now. MMA fighting is so difficult. Like, it's so hard to stay healthy and be able to defend those titles. Because, like, to make people happy, just like the question said, you have to defend both titles, like, twice a year to make everybody happy. Mm-hmm. Once a year is not enough. So if you can fulfill that, God bless you. But I haven't seen anybody that can do it.
And God bless Israel Adesanya for basically admitting, like, I'm going to clean out my division and then I'll go up to light heavyweight. Because that Jon Jones fight now would be big money. And he's like, nope, I have stuff to do in middleweight, and then I'll go up. Jon Jones wants to fight me now because I'm small. Like, didn't Israel Adesanya weigh like 183, 184, one of his weigh-ins? Like, he's a skinny cat. It's not like it's going to be easy for him to just bulk up to like 205 immediately. He's going to take some time. So 2021, we might have an actual champ versus champ fight that makes sense after, if Israel Adesanya cleans out division and Jon Jones stays the course. But enough of this champ talk. I'm over it. Everyone is over. Well, maybe not everyone. If you guys are over, you can tell me in the comment section. But we're going to move right along in the comment section from Tyler Durden, 31. Is this a tipping point for the UFC? Or is it just my growing lack of interest? I used to look forward to cards and rank the matchups, but it seems the UFC has lost its center. Could the Conor effect be there? B, there's little out there that's exciting. Adesanya probably is the guy now. How about a lightweight tournament to get shit rolling? Interesting question. I've been hearing this a lot from fans, a lot of my friends that don't really watch MMA like we do every single week because it's our job. They'll ask me, like, oh, what do you do on Saturday? I'm like, UFC fight. They're like, again? It's like the 12th week in a row there's a UFC fight. And then when there's no UFC, there's Bellator. Or one championship or Cage Warriors. But this is specifically a UFC question. Our MMA Fighting Zone, Alex Cayley, and Mike Schiappetta have a great write-up on The Great Divide last week about is there too many events in the UFC. So if you haven't read that, go check it out. Last week's The Great Divide. It's a fantastic piece. Esther Lynn did an excellent graphic for the thumbnail where she spliced together like 10 different arenas all from the same angle. It was great. But is this just a case of too many events like we've been hearing for a long time where if you look at, like, I don't know, say 2008, 2007 UFC, there's not that many events in every card seems to be stacked from top to bottom. And now we're getting fights in Busan, which is great. And I'm sure we're going to talk about that main event on this card, on this chat. But then the other 10 fights don't really do anything for the casual fans. Or is this just a lot of fans, which I've also heard Conor brought them in. And now that Conor's not there and there's really no star power. Ronda's gone. Brock Lesnar's gone. He mentioned Israel Adesanya. Is this just, there's no interesting characters, or is this just burnout from too many fight cards?
Probably the latter on that one. I mean, there's a lot of fight cards. And the locations for some of these places are just unbelievable. Isn't there one coming up in Rio Ranchero, New Mexico.
Rio Rancho, yeah.
I've never even heard of Rio Rancho until this card was announced. Like, I'm nothing against the area. Like, Albuquerque is a major city in New Mexico. Rio Rancho, never really heard of it, but expect a lot of local fighters out there. They're trying to get into new markets, and I understand what they're trying to do here. But I'd say it's at least like December 7th, the UFC DC card was looking pretty good on paper. And then we've had some switches and some of the fighters came out, but like next Monday when it's actually fight week, we're going to be so excited for that card because we haven't had an event in 2 weeks. So it's nice to have that break. And then we got 3 weeks in a row and then we're off for like another 2 or 3 weeks after that. So we're going to get a little bit of a reprieve. We're going to get a little bit of a break. We're going to be able to miss it a little bit more. And if you're a hardcore MMA fan, there's plenty of MMA. I mean, look at last weekend. You had LFA, you had CFFC, you had Bellator, you had Cage Warriors, you had a plethora of different MMA events you could watch and that were at your disposal. So there are a lot of events, and it just depends on what kind of a fan you are. If you're a casual fan, you may not care as much. If you're a hardcore fan, you're going to watch every bit of it. So, and if you're a storyline guy like myself, I try to find a story in every event, no matter how strong or weak the card is. So I can always find angles to enjoy fight cards and make them a little more interesting. So it just depends what kind of fan you are. You're not going to please everybody, because if you don't have this many events, you're going to piss off the hardcore fan too. So you just got to pick which side of the fence you're on.
I agree. I think there might be, I like the fact that they go to all these weird cities. Like, I was super excited to go cover an event in Bangor, Maine that one time, because a lot of fight fans don't get to go to live events, and these going to Rio Rancho, going to Raleigh, going to Wichita, going to Utica, like all these places really gets these fans that maybe never thought they could watch a UFC fight live. Like, if you're in Utica, New York, and the closest you can get is like Albany or Rochester or Scott, like Madison Square Garden. There's no way you're making it like what, 6 hour drive, 5 hour drive, whatever it is, and paying that to New York City. Like, people say New York and they immediately think New York City, but like Utica is like way up there. So they're not, for those types of cities, I love it. They're obviously not going to get big title fights. Like, I believe the Utica fight card was Jimmy Rivera and Marlon Moraes was on that card. But then you got Gregor, you get those fights, like the young Gregor Gillespie was on that. Like, Jessica Aguilar was supposed to be on that. So you get those fun fights. And then the Rochester one was, I think, Kevin Lee and RDA, if I'm not mistaken. And right. Wichita was JDS. And was that Derek Lewis? Or was that, right?
Was it that one?
I don't remember.
Was it Lewis?
Was it
Lingano?
No, that was the Minnesota one, I believe.
That was Lewis. You're right.
So you get these events in these small cities that maybe no one would expect to get them. So I love that. I don't know if they have to go to Las Vegas like 3 months in a row. But again, those are for the big pay-per-views. And I saw a question about this January pay-per-view supposedly in Las Vegas. So we'll save that for later. I get it. I get what the UFC is doing. I get they have a lot of fighters on the roster. They got to get them all fights. I think a lot of fans might be a little burnt out. I'm curious to see how UFC 245 does in terms of buys or in terms of viewership when we do get this long break. We had 244, and then I think, what was the one right after 244? Was that the Sao Paulo card, or was that, I don't even remember. It's all a blur to me. We had that Sao Paulo card, which had really interesting fights. That fight dragged forever. Like, that fight card dragged forever, and then it culminated in not the greatest main event. And now we get this break, and then we have UFC 245, which is just like three title fights, the return of Jose Aldo making his debut, Uriah Faber's on that card. Like, that fight card is fantastic. And then we get the Busan fight card, which the main event is the best fight of the year, in Jose's opinion, because I've been waiting for that fight for 5 years between the Korean Zombie and Brian Ortega. But have you gone back and looked at some of the fight cards from like 2008, 2009? Like those fight cards will have like Rampage Jackson as like the third fight on the main, or like Lyoto Machida will be like the co-main event. And then like Randy Couture is also on the card. Like, that, those fight cards were must watch television. Unless it's a big title fight, I don't know if the UFC is having a lot of must-watch television on ESPN these days. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I mean, there are certain cards that do better than others, and I kind of like what they did with Boston too. I like how they mix in a Friday card every once in a while. Yeah. Like, it mixes things up. Like, it's one day, it's 24 hours earlier, but still, it mixes things up a little bit. It opens up schedules in different ways. So I hope they add, you know, two or three more Friday night cards. Maybe add a Sunday card here and there. Like, I don't mind that at all. Not everything has to be so uniform all the time. It doesn't have to be Saturday, 8 o'clock every single time. Like, Saturday, 10 p.m. main card start every single time. Like, I like when they mix things up a little bit and they shuffle the deck.
Like, I just put in a random number. UFC 82. That's the one I put in. Like, you got Andrei Arlovsky on the prelims, Josh Koscheck, Diego Sanchez, and then you got John Fitch, Okami, Lieben, Shek Congo, and then Anderson Silva, Dan Henderson. Like, that's a good fight card for, like, what year was that? 2008? Like,
yeah.
If that, like, but
UFC-
then... It,
UFC 100, John Jones was on the prelims. I don't even think he was on TV at all that day.
Wasn't that like his second or third fight in the UFC?
Yeah.
Jim Miller was on that fight card. I think was Jim Miller the only one on UFC 100 and 200?
Yeah.
Because John Jones was supposed to be, but then that fell apart. But that had, Anderson, that had Lesnar, that George, that had Mike Bisping, Dan Henderson. Wasn't Akiyama's like UFC debut on that card?
Yeah, he fought Alan Belcher on that card.
Yeah. Oh my God. And he won, right? That was like his only win in the UFC.
Yeah, it was a decision win. Mark Coleman fought Stephen Bonner on that card.
See, that fight card is, but that's you. But that's UFC 100. Like, UFC 200 was unbelievable too, even though they lost the main event. You still get these really stacked cards. Like, UFC 235 was fantastic. UFC 239. UFC 238, if I'm not mistaken, had the most ranked fighters obviously the past ones, there were no rankings. But since the UFC rankings, like, took shape, I believe UFC 238 in Chicago had the most ranked fighters on one single pay-per-view card, or just one card in general. And, like, theoretically, there were three or four number one contender fights on that card. We had the main event, which was obviously the championship fight, and then the co-main event was the Valentina Shevchenko and Jessica Ai. But then we also had Callum Chookagian versus Joanne Calderwood, which everyone just kind of assumed was the number one contender. We had Aljamain Sterling versus Pedro Munhoz, which people just assumed was the number one contender. And I think that, like, the Peter Yan fight, he was arguing that he should get the shot. And then Tony Ferguson won, so that was for sure a number one contender fight. So you do still have fight cards like that, but then you have the fight cards that no one, like the Moscow card I watched because it's my job, and B, I liked that fight card, but I don't know how many eyeballs tuned in, especially over here on the West Coast when it started at like 4 or 5 in the morning. I know you watched it because your boy Calvin Cater was on that card, but there are fight cards that are specifically made for the markets, and I do get that. They're trying to break into the Moscow market. And it was great that Zabit headlined it because now he's a bigger star in that marketplace. But, like, can you imagine if they put, like, Khabib in Moscow? Like, come on.
Oh, my God.
Or UFC 242, that was Khabib Poirier, right?
Yep.
Outside of that main event, there obviously Felder and Barbosa was good.
The co-main event.
Yeah, like those two fights, but then other than that, it was really built for that that region of the world.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Andrea Lee versus Calderwood was a good fight.
Yeah,
because it was a female fight, and that was just huge and putting it on that spot. But yeah, that was one of the more interesting fights on that entire card, in my opinion, was that fight. Obviously, Calderwood got the job done, but yeah, that was a very Russian, you know, very very area laden card for sure.
Same as, I think, UFC 240. I liked that one. That was Frank Edgar, Max Holloway. And then it also had Cyborg versus Felice Spencer. But, like, Media Day, like, you've covered Media Days enough in your time, especially for pay-per-views. They didn't bring out nearly anyone for Media Day. There were, like, four or five fighters from each corner. It wasn't, like, 13 fighters. So, like, even UFC 240 was obviously stacked with... Stacked's not the right word. They had a lot of Canadians on that card. And then it was really built around the top two fights. Like, Hakeem Duwadu was on the prelims, which was very shocking to me considering he was fighting Edmonton Wright, and he did get that KO. But I think burnout is for sure a real thing. But we don't want to burn you guys out on this conversation. Transition. So we're going to move right along. From Zaku Kokegi, which I've been told I'm pronouncing that correctly, Gina Carano, spelled Gina wrong. We finally found out what happened with her comeback fight. After hearing how Dana treated the situation, how would you guys have walked away from a $1 million payday out of principle? Have a happy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to you too, Zakuko Keki. So, Mike, I don't know if you saw. I'm sure you did, because if you didn't, you'd be living under a rock and not doing your duties as an MMA journalist. Gina Carano was on Ariel Helwani's show on ESPN, and she finally pulled back the curtain on the supposed plan for her return fight. Man, I'm sure you remember it. I was at that. Remember when Dana would do those scrums after every fight? That kind of became like must-watch YouTube. He said, like, I just signed Gina Carano. Like, we're going to make Gina versus Ronda. Ronda could go up in 145 to fight Gina. It's the only fight. I was there, and then that fight never happened, and then Dana White threw her under the bus. Gina Carano now said that Dana White prematurely made the announcement after she asked for, like, 6 months to find a team that she can trust, threw her under the bus, like, mistakenly sent her a text message calling her some not nice things directly to her, and that was that. She cut off all ties to her. So, A, were you surprised that Dana White prematurely announced a fight, threw his fighter under the bus, or not even his fighter, threw a potential superstar under the bus, offered her $1 million, and that basically, are you surprised by the whole situation?
No, because we're dealing with that situation right now with Khabib and Tony Ferguson. So not to this extent, not to where Dana sent a text message to Tony Ferguson about Tony Ferguson accidentally to get him to sign the contract. I'm not surprised by any of this stuff, to be honest with you, because that's what Dana does. He, you know, when Dana talks, just like what you said, when he used to do those scrums, that puts a lot of pressure because everyone in the media is going to write about it. Everyone in the media is going to talk about it and go on Twitter and talk about it. And that puts extra pressure on a fighter like Gina Carano and a person like Gina Carano who doesn't like the pressure. She's just not a pressure person. In terms of would I have walked away from a $1 million payday out of principle, I will say this. There's a difference between 36-year-old Mike Heck with a wife and a son who's making tens of dollars a month covering the sport of mixed martial arts on his own, trying to do this full time. And then there's Gina Carano, who was an actress and she built this sort of empire within herself. So she was doing quite fine. And she said multiple times in the interview that she thinks about fighting all the time, but she doesn't need to fight. Like, she found her passion in acting. She found her passion in trying to make something great on the big screen. So she didn't need to fight. This was a great opportunity for her. Yeah, $1 million. Why not? The $1 million fight. She compared it to the Leila Ali fight. But I'm not surprised she walked away. Would I have walked away in the position I'm in? Probably not for $1 million. I mean, let's be honest. There's a lot of things I would do for $1 million. There's obviously a line there, ladies and gentlemen, but $1 million is a lot of money for somebody like me. So would I fight John Jones for $1 million? Yep, I would take that ass whooping real quick.
I'd fight John Jones for like $50,000, honestly. not that, well, maybe a little more, because I'm sure I'd have to pay for my own medical expenses and all that stuff. But none of this surprised me whatsoever, especially Dana White throwing fighters under the bus. It's really Gina Carano is one of the biggest female stars in the history of MMA. I'd put her right below Ronda Rousey. She was the original face of women's mixed martial arts. I saw a lot of female after that interview was done, and they put that clip out. Like, Ariel tweeted the clip out. A lot of female fighters, like Angela Hill. I was like the one that came to mind. I was like, someone was like, I never even saw a woman fight MMA until her fight with Cyborg. And Angela Hill was like, me neither. So like a lot of female fighters were like quote tweeting that and like respond to it, saying like Gina was really the first person that they saw as someone that they like, oh, like this is a real thing. Like, I could do this. So the female fighters obviously had Gina's back. I'm curious to see if any of them really speak out with Gina's comments, but Gina Carano is a movie star, and it's not like she's in these small indie films. Like, she's in The Mandalorian. She's in the Deadpool movies. Like, she starred in Haywire, her own movie. Like, she's in these big blockbuster movies. So, like you said it, you'd fight John Jones for $1 million. I think she's doing okay. I think she's doing just okay. The thing I will say is it felt like Dana wanted to give Gina Carano $1 million to fight Ronda, lose, and then basically just build Ronda off of that win. I don't know if Dana ever really cared about signing Gina Carano as much as using Gina Carano to bolster Ronda Rousey's mystique in the eyes of the fans, because if Ronda Rousey beats Gina Carano, like, that's that I don't know, like a year ago when Mark Raimondi and Sean Elshadi were hosting this, I actually was speaking with Mark about this in New York. He put together this hypothetical all-female card. It was off the heels of the WWE Women's Revolution card that they did, the whole female pay-per-view. And he goes, if you had to put together an all-female UFC card, MMA card, like this could be cross-promotion, who would you put? And the main event was Ronda Rousey, Gina Carano. Like that was his hypothetical thing. And I couldn't say I disagreed, where it was like the face, the two faces of women's MMA. I'll let you answer this too. I think Amanda Nunes is the greatest female fighter of all time in terms of in-ring capability and her accolades. But in terms of who made the biggest mark, it's Ronda and Gina Carano. Like it's 1A, 1B. I'd give Ronda a slight edge considering she actually fought in the UFC and did on the cover of Sports Illustrated and all that. But when I heard that, I immediately was like, oh, Dana just wanted her to lose and then show her the door. Like, you think Gina Carano's going to stick around for another fight if she lost to Ronda Rousey?
Probably not. But still, it was $1 million. She'd go off and do movies and do just fine. So it was worth an opportunity to, you know, to scratch that proverbial itch and then make a good amount of money, get into a training camp. She loves doing that stuff, like she said. But you know, sometimes we don't get what we want, and sometimes when something we want is right there in front of us, we push a little too hard for it. And that's what Dana White did there. And he and take it from somebody who sent an accidental text message like that to somebody before. Yeah, that there's no coming back from that. Once you send that text and you realize that you made that mistake and you have to sweat it out waiting for the reply, yeah. I never did that again. Let's just say that.
Someone in the comment section says, I'll fight Jose and Mike for 50 cents. Well, that'd be a terrible night for you, sir. But we're going to move right along. From longtime commenter Rob Holland, Habib versus Tony. After knowing, and again, I read these verbatim. After knowing for quite some time that Tony is next, we finally get a date, and it's the effing spring. It's the effing spring. They didn't even put a question mark. Dare I say, and hopefully not jinx it, this just gives both men more time to get injured. What are your thoughts on this choice and also the involvement of Ali Abdelaziz and his games in the negotiations? I don't know what games he's playing because I haven't spoken to Ali personally about it, but I did speak to him at the Dominance MMA Media Day, and he said, like, Justin Gaethje could skip over Tony Ferguson. Like, I'm like, I know. Like, no one should fight Habib before Tony Ferguson. The lead up to Gaethje versus Cerrone, both fighters were asked, like, who's next after this fight for the title? They're like, Tony Ferguson. Like, are you kidding me? Like, look at the last time Tony Ferguson lost, women weren't even in the UFC. Like, this is the first time two fighters with two 10 plus fight win streaks are fighting for a champion, are fighting in the UFC. Like, I'm going to tear my hair out if people want, if someone comes up to me and goes, I think Justin Gaethje should fight Habib before Tony, like, or better yet, I had people saying Tony Ferguson should fight Justin Gaethje. I'm like, you're stupid. Like, no, like Tony Ferguson has to fight. You should have already fought Habib. But what do you think about the timing of the fight? And I don't think this fight is ever going to happen. I've been on record many a time on this show saying, I'm not going to believe this fight happens until they're actually in the octagon. And then I bet we get a UFC 244 situation or like Cerrone Ferguson situation where it's like a cut or a blown eye or something like that. I think the worst case scenario, every single fight. I don't know where you stand on this, but it's the time finally now for Habib versus Tony Ferguson.
Well, if you're going to do it in Brooklyn, I prefer you do it in April. I'd rather not have it in January or February because there could be ice on the ground, on the sidewalks, and snow on the ground, and they could slip and fall. Like, I don't want any of that stuff. I don't want anything at all to get in the way of this fight. To build off what you said about not believing it until you see it, like, to quote the great Michael Scott from The Office, fool me once, strike one. Fool me twice, strike three. Like, so many times we've been bought into this thing. Bubble wrap them all you want. But again, this fight's not done yet. Like on all accounts, it's not done. Tony Ferguson has not signed that contract yet. So before we get too excited, we got to wait for that to happen. The timing, you could do that fight anytime, anywhere at this point. And obviously, I believe, I'm not sure if you covered UFC 208 in Brooklyn. Were you there for that card?
I was not there for that card.
Okay. So just... Brooklyn is the perfect place for Habib if it's not in Russia or Abu Dhabi because they did a Q&A one day during the build-up to UFC 208 in this community in Brooklyn. I mean, it is like Russian Central. And that, like, it was such a mob scene for Khabib. Like, Khabib just showed up. It was right before, it was right after the Ferguson fight that year for 209 was announced. So he goes in there, he does this Q&A, and they just mobbed him. I mean, there's such a contingency of Khabib fans in that area. So it is the perfect place to host this fight if you're going to do it in the United States. Because Khabib's going to have a lot of support, a lot of people coming out for him. The building is going to be absolutely electric. And then Tony Ferguson will thrive off of that. That's the stuff that he's made of. He's just a wacky guy like that. He wants to be the away team. He wants to be the hated guy. So he'll love that. But again, I'm with you until Bruce Buffer announces them and they have the face-off and the referee says, let's go, and the first punch is thrown, then I'll actually believe it's happening. It's like Nick Diaz coming back and fighting in the UFC. Until that happens, until, like, let's go and the first punch is thrown, I don't believe it's ever going to happen.
It will never happen. Khabib versus Tony will never happen. I'm going to say that until I'm blue in the face because I believe in reverse psychology. Now that I've said that, I've probably jinxed it. But I've been there on the scene for most of their scheduled fight, actually all of their scheduled fights, and they've all fallen apart. But honestly, I had this thought the other day when this whole situation where it's like, oh, Tony, when Khabib or Ali put the picture out of Khabib signing it, and he's like sign your end, big boy, or something like that. Is this all like the fight gods just playing a game with us? Because doesn't it seem like this fight is bigger than ever now? Now we have two guys on the two longest streaks. With the two of them combined, they've basically cleaned out the division. Like, Tony Ferguson has beaten everyone they've put in front of him late, like since his loss to Michael Johnson. Khabib's beaten everyone he's put in front of him. He's undefeated. Is this just, if they had fought on that, where were they supposed to fight? Like Tampa Bay or Orlando, weren't they on that Fox card or something like that fell apart when like Tony Ferguson was like coughing blood or something? That fight wouldn't have been as big a deal then. And then they were supposed to fight at UFC 209. But I believe it was for the interim title or something like that, and then it fell apart, and then they were supposed to fight in Brooklyn at UFC 223. And then the Conor situation really made Khabib a bigger star, did it not?
Oh, 100%. Definitely.
So
it's, yeah, continue.
Is this now the perfect time? Is this storm of chaos now granted us the biggest fight we could put together? Because now this is obviously a bigger deal than it ever was before. Is this all just a ruse by the fight gods to give us the biggest fight in lightweight history?
As a parent, I can say this, and it's a good comparison. When your kid does something over and over again, you say, like, this is the last chance. This is your last chance, I promise you. And you say that over and over and over again, and you still end up giving him what he wants, like, 20 minutes later. This is literally the last chance that people are going to buy into this. Like, you can't do this again. This is it. So it has peaked as much as it can at this point. And if this thing falls apart again, like even if Tony Ferguson says, no, I don't like the deal, I'm not signing it. That's it. The only other idea you can do, and I thought this is brilliant, I think Helwani said this a couple of years ago, is that you don't even announce this fight's happening. Like you tell both competitors that the fight's happening and then you build it up, let them train. And then like a day before say, hey, for $15, you can watch Tony Ferguson fight Khabib Nurmagomedov tomorrow on UFC Fight Pass. Like this is how it works. Like don't tell anybody, don't jinx it. Just announce it the day before and then just let it happen. Like I'd rather see that happen than build this thing up for another 5 months. Like that's a lot of time to worry about. And to your friend Jessica, because I do watch the show, if you're going to send crystals to anybody, send all the crystals to Khabib and Tony Ferguson at this point. Like whatever magic, whatever things we could do with these crystals, like let's send that power to them too. And everybody else around us, maybe all the MMA fans, just to keep us calm through this whole thing.
I'm going to have all the crystals around me. I got my crystals right here. I'm just going to be people listening can hear that. I'm just rolling my crystals in my hands. This isn't a situation where it's always one fighter getting hurt. Both fighters are equally at fault here. Like Tony Ferguson, was punctured lung or coughing up blood or something. Like Khabib blew his knee out or something, and then Khabib like passed out, missed cutting weight the day before. Tony Ferguson trips on a wire on the Fox lot. Like this is both men. It's not like one fighter's cursed. We're all cursed, ladies and gentlemen. We're all cursed. And my former colleague Sean Al-Shadi is very much on the Tony Ferguson is going to win this fight. I believe me and him are in agreement that whoever wins this fight is the greatest lightweight, whoever lived. I don't think it's really a debate right now. I think the default answer for a long time has been BJ Penn, but that's simply because the lightweight division has been so competitive that there really hasn't been a long-standing champion outside of BJ Penn. And then Conor McGregor winning and holding up the division for so long kind of put a damper on that. But this is the biggest in terms of, I don't even care if there's a crowd. I just want to watch this fight. This is just high-level martial arts at its finest. This is up there with, like, there's no comparison. This is the best fight. This is the most highest skilled fight I can think of that we're going to get in 2021. But it doesn't matter because we're not going to get it. We're never going to get this fight. We're going to stop talking about it real quick because the more we talk about it, the more of a chance they're gonna fall apart. No, I don't believe in The Secret. I think The Secret is the dumbest thing in the whole wide world. But I believe in putting out negative energy into the world and jinxing the greatest lightweight fight ever. And I'm just going to convince myself that those four failed fights were all just building up to this one moment.
Everything happens for a reason, Jose. This is it.
Everything happens for a reason, and I can pray and pray all I want, but it will never happen. But we're going to move right along because the more we talk about it, the less likely that fight will happen. UFC's lackluster schedule from Robin G87. The only event to look forward to is a stacked UFC 245. Besides that, there are not many events worth mentioning for a long time. One, I believe that's like seven O's. Have you encountered periods like this where there are almost no big UFC events for a couple months? Seems like a new thing to me, at least the last couple years. Is this a sign that the U is changing its vision of big events, or is this a one-off? Well, I disagree on no big events coming up. I love that Busan card, specifically for the main event. I think that whole fight card is worth it for that main event between the Korean Zombie and Brian Ortega. Last I saw, the odds were dead even. It was like minus 145, minus 145 or something like that. That's about as close a fight as you can get. That's just violent martial arts at its finest. And then you got that January fight card where supposedly Conor's coming up, but looking less likely the closer we get. And then we got Dominic Reyes, John Jones in February. Valentina Shevchenko, Chukagian's on that card too. Even that January card, like Macy Barber fights Roxanne Modafari. I believe Anthony Pettis fights Diego Ferreira on that card. So there's good fights coming up. If you're just talking about just the rest of 2019, which this person doesn't say, but I'm just going to assume that's what they're doing because there's some great fights in early 2020. There's only like two UFC events left. In 2019. So I don't know what they're complaining about. UFC 245 is absolutely stacked. Korean Zombie, Brian Ortega is my favorite fight of all time. It hasn't even happened yet. And then the last few months have been great. So, but in terms of, have you encountered periods like this where there are almost no big UFC events for a couple months? I can't think of any. I'm sure I can. Mike, can you think of any off the top of your head of these long stretches of time of lack, quote unquote, lackluster schedule?
I would say that, like, the one that really sticks out to me was right before UFC 208. Like, wasn't there, like, a big event scheduled for January? That got canceled. Something big happened, like, the month before. So, like, they almost had to cancel 208. So that's why they put Holm versus Duran in me and, like, created a title just to, like, put something on that card. You know what I mean? So, like, that's probably the time I remember. But here's something. I had a conversation with a buddy of mine the other day who's kind of a casual UFC fan. And he asked me the same question. I'm like, dude, I know this seems like so long ago, but UFC 244 was this month. Like, it happened this month. The Rock, President Trump, the BMF title, all of that stuff was this month. It was just a couple of weeks ago. Like, it's not like we haven't had any significant. It's not like UFC Boston was the last event we had until DC. Like, we've had some big moments. We had Adesanya. We had, you know, we had UFC 244, which is just a massive spectacle. Like, that event was insanity from start to finish, like, whether you're watching on television or whether you're there in person. So, yeah, now we're getting a little bit of a reprieve. I think the DC card gets a little bit of a boost because we get that little bit of a breather. But like you said, 245 is a great card. Busan's going to be actually a good card. It's a good hardcore fans card, sure. For sure. Matt Schnell is on that card, who's one of the most exciting guys at flyweight right now. There's some interesting storylines there. You can find him anywhere. And then we're going to get another little bit of a break to build back up towards the January 18th cards and building into February as we head to Houston in March. And hopefully, knock on wood, April in Brooklyn with Habib and Tony. So it'll all work out. We're just taking a little walk around the block right now. We're going to get to our destination soon, and everything's going to be fine.
couldn't have put it any better myself, sir. I think the only other year I can think of, remember there was that year of all those injuries just crippled the UFC's plans. Like, we're supposed to have like Khabib versus like Donald Cerrone, like John Jones, not even injuries, just like things in general. John Jones supposed to fight Anthony Johnson on that same card. It's like, and then because of all that, like the New Orleans, like we're supposed to have Bader versus DC in New Orleans, and then DC got pulled to fight Rumble, and instead Dan Henderson versus like Tim Bosch main evented that. And then there was that year like Dominic Cruz and Uriah were supposed to fight UFC 148, but then they got pulled, and instead Uriah Faber fought Hannon Burrow in like Calgary, and that's like historically one of the worst pay-per-views ever. So, but those are all because
2017, right?
I think that was like 2013, 2014. I can't remember. 2017
was a bad year too, outside of Connor and Floyd, right? Or is that 20? Yeah, outside of that, that was a year like that. Not as extreme, but it was like that.
Correct. We had a lot, but like Anthony Johnson fought Daniel Cormier, and like was that Buffalo? And then we had we had the Tyron Woodley Stephen Thompson fight. We had Tyron Woodley versus Damian Maia. Like, those are all great, but those are all good cards. Like, I wouldn't say this is a lackluster schedule whatsoever. Again, this might just go back to the burnout. Maybe there are just less cards people are interested in, but there are still phenomenal fights. Like that UFC Sao Paulo card, which everyone was complaining about, like Charles Oliveira was on that card. That's great. Like Shogun Nuhua, which if you think of MMA royalty, like Shogun Nuhua is MMA royalty, not just UFC, like mixed, like martial arts royalty. Whenever Shogun Nuhua fights, it's must watch television. And then the main event, maybe left a lot to be desired, but that could have been a number one contender fight if John Blachowicz had won. So maybe it's just Robin G87, maybe it's just less fight cards you're interested in, because I wouldn't say any of those fight cards were lackluster. And like UFC 244 was just a couple weeks ago. The Boston card was before that. Like, these are good fights. UFC 244 was awesome. Like, it's like UFC 243, Israel Adesanya. Like, people were complaining that fight card was not as stacked. It kind of had that Abu Dhabi type feel where, like, we were supposed to have Holly Holm on that card, but instead, like, Dan Hooker and Ally Quinta were elevated to the co-main event after Holly got hurt. Fight, like, Israel Adesanya and Rob Whittaker fight made that whole fight card worth it. And they were like, Jorgen De Castro were kind of catapulted himself into the eyes of the fans. Shout out to Fall River, Massachusetts on that one. But there were a lot of epic fights on that card. Again, I think but it's all subjective. What I consider lackluster, Mike might consider lackluster. Might not consider lackluster. But we could talk about this all day. One final question on the site before we hop over to Twitter. Should there be an exception from Grin N? Should there be an exception that Conor McGregor will... Should there be any expectation that Conor McGregor will return to the Octagon in January? With January just around the corner, it seems strange that an official announcement has not been released. Conor fighting at the start of the new year seems like something the UFC would heavily promote, and now just weeks away, it's been awfully quiet. So, we kind of talked about this a little bit earlier. Conor McGregor announced he was fighting, I believe it was January 14th, January 18th, 18th. He announced that. He's like, I am fighting on this card. Dana White was like, huh? Okay. And then was like scrambling to put together a fight for him. Apparently, supposedly it was Donald Cerrone. I have a lot of thoughts on that fight. I get it, but I wish he was fighting someone else, but I get it. But now we're getting closer and closer to that January 18th date. There's no announcement. There's a card, but there's no announcement. And it's really kind of put a wrench into, like, when they announced John Jones versus Dominic Reyes, they didn't say UFC 246 or UFC 247. They just said February event, because there's no number. Because if Conor McGregor decides he's fighting January 18th, you know that's going to be UFC 246 in Las Vegas. If he doesn't fight, I doubt they're going to do a pay-per-view card without Conor McGregor. Maybe they cancel it. Maybe they just make it a fight night like they did with the was it the Johnny Hendricks?
Wonderboy.
That was supposed to be Kane and Verdum. And then when Kane got hurt, they just kept it in the same venue. They just made it a fight night. Maybe this is the same situation. I'm not sure. If they do cancel it, this would be the third time in 4 years they've canceled the January pay-per-view. If I'm not mistaken, they canceled it, like you said, right before UFC 208, which is 2017, right? And then there was nothing in 2018. And then 16, there might... Yep. 2016, there was nothing last year, right? That's when they offered Kamaru offered to fight Colby or Ben Askren in January, but then it didn't happen. So then they had that February fight card. So this would be what, the third time in 4 years they'd be there would be no January pay-per-view. That's rough. But again, if they're going to take, it ended up being a blessing because like UFC 235 became that much more stacked. If people are complaining about no big pay-per-view cards, like this is the situation we run into where I've said this before. I love these three championship fight cards, but it throws everything off. Like we have three champions fighting at UFC 245, and now we had a champion fighting at we had a made up belt UFC 244, and now we have no champions to fight in January. But again, Mike, your thoughts on this whole Conor McGregor situation, because I'm going to get right in the face if I keep thinking about this.
For those who've been thinking that Conor McGregor is irrelevant right now, this just proves you wrong. I mean, the power this man has right now, because clearly this is a game going on right now, because if you look at the UFC website alone over the last week to 10 days, you know, it went from Fight Night, Vegas, Fight Night, Houston, to Houston being UFC 246, to Houston now being a Fight Night again. So now we don't know what the heck's going on, because the ball is clearly in Conor McGregor's court right now. So they're trying to figure this out. Conor has all the weight in this situation. Like, he could call the UFC right now and be like, all right, dude, I'm in. Like, we've agreed to terms. Like, let's make this happen. That's automatically a pay-per-view. If he doesn't say that, then it just becomes a Fight Night, and they have to scramble to find some other main event at this point. So I wonder what they have in the back burner right now. Like, what's the backup plan if Conor doesn't take this fight in terms of what can be the main event? Are we thinking maybe a Joanna Zhang Wei Li fight? Like, could both of these ladies be ready for January? Like, that's a belt that could be defended. That's a really fascinating fight right now. Rose Namajunas is talking about coming back at this point. I don't know when. So, I mean, clock's ticking. Tick-tock. If Conor's going to be on it, like, there needs to be some sort of a deadline here. And if he surpasses that deadline, we need to have a backup plan in place. So, like you said, the three title fights are awesome. You know, what have you done for me lately? We gave you three title fights, but now what are you going to do for us in January? So, you know, Conor showing his prolific power abilities right now. Where it ends, I don't know, but clock's ticking. I mean, Thanksgiving is tomorrow. So they got to make some sort of decision. They got to do it pretty quickly.
Yeah, in that situation where I believe it was like the UFC 205 when they had three title fights, that was Conor, Eddie, which again, that's technically the featherweight title was kind of put like held up too because of that fight. Then you had Joanna and Kaitlyn Kovacevic, and then Tyron Woodley and Stephen Thompson. And then like before that, you had Demetrius Johnson fight on like a tough finale, 204. I can't even remember UFC 204. Like, was that Stipe? I can't even remember.
203 was Stipe.
Can't even remember. Whatever it was. And then UFC 207, or not UFC, like UFC 206, they had to make it an interim featherweight title fight between Max Holloway and Anthony Pettis. And then UFC 207 had two title fights too between Ronda and Amanda Nunes, and then Garbrandt and Dominic Cruz. And then that's what, like five or six champions used in like a 2.5 month window. And now they have nothing for January. I had heard they wanted that to be the Anaheim card and have like maybe Michael Bisping fight Joel Romero on that card, but that obviously didn't happen. But I'm looking at January 18th. What does this fight card look right now? Right now it's a UFC fight night. We got Andre Feely, Sadiq Youssef, Roxanne Modafari versus Macy Barber, Nazrat Haqparast versus Drew Dober, Grant Dawson, Chaz Kelly, Alexi Olenek, Maurice Green, and then Anthony Pettis versus Carlos Diego Fajeda. None of those fights are headlining a pay-per-view. But maybe Roxanne Modafari versus Macy Barber headlines a fight night. Maybe Anthony Pettis dropping back down to lightweight. But again, like, are any of these fights bringing a lot of eyeballs? Like, right now it's listed, if you look up on Google, it's UFC Fight Night 166, Pettis versus Fajeda. Is that the fight you'd pick to headline that card?
Macy's the fight. Of these seven fights that are on here, it's Macy Barber versus Roxanne Modafferi. It's not even close.
I think the only argument against that is Roxanne's coming off a loss, but so is Anthony Pettis. So what am I talking about? And I would agree. It's one of those two fights. Carlos Diego Fajeda is on like a 5-fight win streak. He has that big win over who did he just beat? Taizimov? Did he beat him in Abu Dhabi, right? So yep. If I'm not mistaken. So it's one of those two, but.
And Roxanne's so interesting because everyone thought Antonina Shevchenko was just going to steamroll her.
Right.
And Roxanne goes in and has the performance she had. So, I mean, if you're counting Roxanne Modafferi out of a fight like this, probably not the best idea. Like, I'd say the odds are in Macy Barber's favor, and I would probably pick her to win that fight. But Roxanne is no joke. She's not a pushover at all. She has seen it all and done it all at this point. So that I think that's the fight. And Roxanne's very marketable too. Like, she can bring in the casual video game playing, comic book reading play fans.
I know.
Yeah, you know. So of these seven fights, that's got to be the main event, but we got to build upon this. I mean, Raleigh is already booked in its entirety. Like, I think
it's
the entire card is booked up.
Agreed. But, like, even if you look at Nico, like, Roxanne Modafari's, like, UFC career, like, wasn't originally scheduled to fight Nico Montano. That was going to be Cejara Eubanks before Cejara fell out. So Roxanne Modafari had a last-minute five-round main event for a title, comes up short, and then beats Barb Honchak by TKO. Loses to Cejara Eubanks, but Cejara Eubanks misses weight by 2.2 pounds or 1.2 pounds. Beats Antonia Shevchenko by split decision in Russia, and then fights Jennifer Maia, who also misses weight by like 4 pounds. So her three losses are last minute five round fight, and then fighters who both missed weight. So Roxanne Modafari, I think, is one of the most beloved fighters on the roster. She's one of the nicest people you'll ever meet in the world. Huge anime fan, huge weeb. I was actually in line with her to get into the World MMA Awards in July, and we literally only talked about Dragon Ball Z the entire time. And she's like, I have a... Because every time she weighs in, you know, she puts on the Super Saiyan. She puts on the Super Saiyan wig, but it's always the next level up. I know you're a big anime fan, Mike. You don't have to tell me. But every time you get to the next level of Super Saiyan, your hair changes. And every time she weighs in, she has the next level. She's like, next one, I'm going silver. And I was like, damn, that's badass. And then she won. Oh, no, she lost. But it was just a bit of a bummer because her opponent had missed weight. And Macy Barber, I don't think, is going to have any problems making weight at 125. She didn't look that great when she weighed in when you and I were in Boston. She looked terrible when she weighed in Denver when I was in that fight card. She missed and then got to weigh in again later on. But I know our cameraman, Casey Lydon. I'll ask you this question. This isn't part of the question. Our cameraman, Casey Lydon, is a very big fan of prospect versus vet fights. What say you?
I like them. Why not? Like, I like the prospect versus vet fights. And it depends on what place they're at in their careers as well. Like, and I'm not disrespecting anybody by saying this, but a guy like Diego Sanchez, like, a fight with a guy like Mickey Gall, like, makes all the sense in the world. Like, Conda versus Mickey Gall made all the sense in the world. Like, those fights when you're trying to put over the next star against a name, like, we just had a discussion about this. Like, you're trying to build stars. You're trying to build stories. You're trying to make people care about these fighters. And sometimes that's what you have to do. Like, and that was one of the things we had a problem with the old Bellator regime. Like, right when Coker came in, we were getting all these freak show fights. But the good news about those, even though we had the Dada Kimbo situation, but guys like Michael Chandler, like, guys that were coming up in the organization, were getting opportunities to shine on those cards. So with the UFC, you're kind of having to do the same thing right now. You have to build these guys on the come up against guys with established names. And unfortunately, we hate to see that. Like, we hated to see BJ Penn fight Yair Rodriguez, but Yair, you know, is as brutal as that was. Yair gets over automatically because he was attached to BJ Penn in that fight. So while I agree with Casey with what you're saying, I like the prospect versus veteran fight. I understand why people don't like it. And I would prefer that over a prospect.
I like prospect fights, but I do. I get it. Like the Mickey Gall Sage Northcutt fight, I think was a fun fight, but it didn't really do anything for either man going down the road. It was just like a fun fight that kind of halted one prospect, and then one prospect didn't really catapult after that in the Mickey Gall situation. But I agree with you. It really depends on where they're at in their career. Like, say, like, Yoel Romero's on, like, a two-fight losing streak right now. You're not going to give a prospect to Yoel Romero, even though he's on a two-fight losing streak. And then say Yoel Romero loses to Israel Adesanya, and he's all of a sudden on a three-fight losing streak. You're going to give, like, Edmund Shabazi and Yoel Romero, like, just toss him to the wolves right away? So I agree with you. I like them when they make sense. This fight makes sense because Macy Barber has been tearing through people. And Roxanne Modafari, I think, is one of those vets that can beat anyone or lose to anyone. She's pretty much the Buffalo Bills of 2019, where they can beat any NFL team or they can lose to any NFL team. But I think this is a fantastic test. She's not the most athletically gifted fighter, though she is, like, very low-key, like, athletic, like Roxanne Modafari. She's been doing this for so long. But Is there anything, like, is there anything she hasn't seen fighting? How many fights does she have? Like, she has more fights probably. How many fights does Macy Barber have? I can't even think of it.
Eight, right? Is she 8-0?
She's 8-0?
Is she 8-0? I'm pretty sure she's 8-0.
If my computer would load. God. Yeah, she's 8-0. Roxanne Modafari is 23-16. Like, Roxanne Modafari has 2 times more losses than Macy Barber has total fights.
Almost five times the amount of fights that Macy Barber's had.
Roxanne Modafari has 1, 2, 3, 4, has had 5 UFC fights. And Macy Barber has 8 career fights. So I love this fight. Macy, I like this fight more than the Paige VanZant fight for Macy Barber, just because I think this will actually show what level of fighter Macy Barber is on. Plus, I always like to see my fellow weebs fight on the big spotlight, because with all this talk about Jon Jones throwing shade at us anime fans, we got to stick together. So if anyone is in the chat, can back me up. But one final question, I'm hopping over to Twitter. Interesting question, don't really know how to answer this. From Chris Poole at MapleBacon88. If the USADA deal was never signed, who would be the champion in each division? Don't know how to answer that. Have no idea how to answer that, because I think it's very dangerous to assume fighters were taking drugs if they haven't failed drug tests and this and that, and you don't know how long they've been taking them. I think a lot that people don't talk about, I don't think enough people talk about, this isn't the question, but the IV ban, I think, played a big factor too. Like, Johnny Hendricks cuts a lot of weight, and now he can't take an IV. I know Hector Lombard said he went up to 185 because the weight cut took such a toll on his body, and then he couldn't rehydrate with an IV. So I think that plays a bigger factor than people admit. A lot of people want to point their finger at USADA and this and that, but I think that IV ban played a big factor initially when it first happened, because you take away the ability to rehydrate like that, that's a major weapon that UFC fighters can have after cutting weight.
Yeah, we're gonna have to do a whole other podcast on on answering that question. My God, like, maybe Brock, like, would Brock Lesnar be the heavyweight champion right now?
I don't want to think of a world where Brock Lesnar's the heavyweight champion.
I mean, like, what he did before the diverticulitis, I mean, that guy was like running through everybody. Like, he just was. Like, he crushed Frank Mir, who was looking real good at the time. And then he went back to WWE, and he had to deal with all those other things, coming back from diverticulitis and lost to Kane. He had that win against Shane Carwin. Like, he was winning fights against, like, really top competition at the time. Then he went back to WWE, had the Mark Hunt fight, and obviously popped. And, you know, he'll probably never fight again at this point. Never say never. But, you know, who knows where he could have been? Like, if he didn't test positive, like, what other fights could have been in store for him? And then more time with a freak athlete like that to get ready? Like, maybe he could have been. I don't know. But this is a super interesting question. And this is, this is a 2-hour podcast.
A lot of people in the comment section right now on YouTube are naming, like, the usual suspects that I think a lot of fans will say, like, Hannon Barrow, Johnny Hendricks, Chris Weidman, this and that. But none of them failed tests, so I don't want to put them in that category of the USADA thing. I know Johnny Hendricks talked openly about the IV. Hannon Barrow hasn't been the same. I also think a lot of that has to do with those gym wars he was in Novo Nyau. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen, like, footage of Novo Nyau training. They have a really hardcore Spartan lifestyle, and maybe this those gym wars with him and Jose Aldo or all those other killers they have down there really played a factor. Because if he's in these, like, 10-minute, quote-unquote, sparring sessions where they're going 100% hitting each other with everything they got, you're going to feel that when you fight inside the octagon. I know Brandon Schaub has openly said, like, when he would spar with Shane Carwin, he would, like, throw up after from, like, all the brain damage he had after that. So those catch up to you. So I think there's a lot more factors than just USADA right now.
I agree.
But that is all the time I have. I'm gonna make a quick peruse over Twitter and Facebook, or Twitter and the site. A lot of the questions on Twitter are the same as the questions on the site, so we'll skip those for now. But thank you so much for joining us, Mike. I know you said you watched the show, so as always, the floor is yours for any promo you want to do, anything you want to plug.
All right, let's talk about the Gina Carano interview a little bit more. One of the things that she said that I absolutely agreed with was fans giving fighters crap on social media and talking a bunch of trash to them. And I could not agree with her more. Like, unless you're a fighter, unless you're in these people's shoes and doing what they do every day and going to the gym 2-3 times a day, making the money they're making, shut the hell up. Like, stop judging these fighters. And at the same time, and I'm not, like, you can say what you want about me. You can call me Dave Doyle 2.0. You can call me, you know, Dana White's younger brother or something like that. I don't give a shit. But, I mean, there are media members out there that are busting their ass trying to get to this position. And so many people are sitting there just trashing them and giving them a bad name and making negative comments. Like cut the shit, dude. Like, there's so many other things you could be doing in this life. Like, well, I like to broadcast from the soapbox of positivity. I'm not saying you have to be like me and be positive all the time, but let's find some middle ground here. Like, if a fighter does something that deserves judgment, that's great. But if a fighter goes out there and wins a fight, and because he didn't do a spinning back fist knockout 27 seconds into the fight, don't go out there and say, this guy sucks, I don't want to see him fight anymore. Like, cut the shit. And in terms of what you want to follow me on, there's a million different things. The Scrap, you can find me at MyMMAnews.com. You can find me at The Body Lock MMA. You can find me at BJPenn.com, Flow Combat. And also, because I will get crushed if I don't mention this, I'm a part of the Loudmouth MMA Podcast Network, probably the best debate show in MMA right now. I fully am confident in that. It's called Between the Links. Jose, you've been a guest on that. And what I think is so great about the show is that there are debate shows like this, but journalists come on the show and they know they have to step their game up. Aaron Bronstetter from TSN came on the show and gave the greatest answer in the history of MMA podcasts. I swear to God. So I highly recommend you go back and watch that. It's awesome. Alexander K. Lee, thank you. This closing A-side speech is fire. I appreciate that. God bless. And as Alexander K. Lee says, MMA is supposed to be fun.
I was about to say that. Like, you're right. You and Alex K. Lee cut from the same cloth. Well, I'm not even going to try and have a promo this week because I'm not topping that. I should have gone first because, Mike, that was beautiful. Could not agree more. I can't even tell you, like, how, like, it's – okay. People who tweet at fighters – and, like, tag them when the fight is happening. Why do you do what you do? Like, I was on Twitter and people were like, at Jan Blachowicz, why do you suck? I'm like, dude, he's fighting right now. Like, the fight is happening. Like, why do... Well, not even just MMA. Sports in general. People are like, at Phillip Rivers, stop throwing interceptions. I'm just like, why are you the way you are? Like, why are you like this, sir or ma'am? But anyway, I'm not even going to have a promo because Mike's was awesome and I'm not topping that. But this has been Jose. That is Mike Keck. I'm sure he'll be on again because he was fantastic. You definitely check out his Between the Link stuff. I've been on. I've been 1-0. I will say, Alex K. Lee, I think, lost, if I'm not mistaken. He has a loss.
He's done pretty well. I think he's like 2-1.
Oh, come on, Alex. Step your game up. But Kristen King was on there. I can't say enough good things about her. Keith Schilling was on there. He's a good guy. I always have fun time being on that. And MMA Fighting Staff, if you're on that, you better come away with a win because we have a reputation to keep. But as always, you can stay on this YouTube channel. You can catch all of PT's clips from Cage Warriors and Bellator London. I believe Esther and Casey are going to be in D.C. for the Alistair Overeem Jairzinho fight, which is going to be an awesome scrap altogether. There's a lot of fun stuff happening. Also, I don't think we're going to have anyone on the Alberto Del Rio Tito Ortiz fight, but we have a little fun interview with Del Rio coming out later. I went to his gym. So stay on this YouTube channel, and when you're done on our YouTube channel, then you can go to Mike's YouTube channels. But next week, usual time, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. We'll have clips out later. This is Jose. That's Mike. Happy Thanksgiving.